Fifth case this morning, Follett Higher Education Group v. Berman.
May it please the Court, my name is Adam Goodman. I represent Follett Higher Education. Follett has three separate reasons justifying reversal of the District Court's decision affirming the decision of the Bankruptcy Court. The first is that an express trust existed between Follett and Jay Berman, and there was plenty of evidence demonstrating that. The second is that Jay Berman and Berman and Associates had real fiduciary duties for years before the breach. And the third is the Fourth Circuit's decision in Ellison, which Berman completely ignored in his response brief. Turning to the first point, that an express trust existed, there was plenty of evidence from which the bankruptcy court could and should have concluded that an express trust existed. There were annual written contracts between Berman and Associates and Follett that set forth the obligations of Berman and Associates. Despite the undisputed fact that Jay Berman destroyed most, if not all, of Berman and Associates' paper and electronic business records, Follett introduced hundreds of pages of business records that detailed in extraordinary detail thousands of payments that Follett made to Berman during the disputed time period, totaling approximately $190,000. And the evidence of trial was undisputed that both Follett, through Carol Mioseth, its business manager for this business, and Jay Berman understood exactly what that money was supposed to be used for. Mr. Berman was entitled to keep the residual 10%, but the 100% of the principal, the cost of the advertising itself, was supposed to be paid to the advertisers, the newspapers, the radio stations, the billboard companies, and so forth. Berman admitted he understood that, and instead of paying the money to the advertisers, he sometimes kept it. Moreover, that's just the $180,000 or $190,000 that was misappropriated. The evidence was undisputed. We didn't have to introduce documents of this because the documents were immaterial to our point. But the evidence at trial was undisputed that Berman received hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars from Follett that was documented in the same way, down to the penny, that he actually did pay to the advertisers. So I would suggest that collectively, the existence of these annual written contracts, the extraordinary level of detail with regard to the misappropriated money, and the fact that there's a comparable extraordinary level of detail with regard to the money that wasn't misappropriated is sufficient to demonstrate the existence of an express trust. Judge Dow in the district court noted that Follett had failed to point to a single document setting all this forth, but there's nothing in the law that requires this, and there's nothing in the law that should require it. The totality of the circumstances here was more than sufficient to demonstrate the existence of an express trust.
It sounds like you're arguing you had an implied express trust.
Well, I think it's more than implied. There were written contracts that...
What provisions in those contracts expressly provide for the trust relationship you're describing?
The provision in the contract is the provision that says that Jay Berman and Berman & Associates are going to provide bill payment services to Follett. And the testimony at trial from both Mr. Berman and Follett was that this was understood not only between them, but is generally understood throughout the advertising brokerage business to mean that when money is paid, the 100%, the base amount, is to be passed on directly to the advertiser. There is a single...
But is there testimony that requires, for example, segregation of funds?
There was no explicit contractual requirement and no document that indicated that Berman was required to set up a fiduciary account.
An express trust would require?
Not necessarily. There's extensive discussion of cases in the parties' respective briefs that don't require that. For example, there's a decision by Judge Schmetterer of the Bankruptcy Court of the Northern District where a single handwritten receipt saying that someone was given several tens of thousands of dollars to purchase, I believe it was two Cadillac limousines, was held sufficient to constitute the creation of an express trust. And here we have not a single receipt, but hundreds, perhaps thousands, of payments conveyed down to the precise penny. And Mr. Berman admitted under oath, this is quoted in our reply brief, that when he received $1,100, he understood that $1,000 was supposed to go to the newspaper and $100 was supposed to go to him. And perhaps Follett was negligent in not auditing Mr. Berman, but that doesn't change the fact that an express trust existed.
How did this work? Did Berman present to Follett the invoices that were received from various newspapers and so forth, and then Follett would issue a check? Correct.
And Exhibits 7 through 60 in the plaintiff's trial exhibit binder are the business records that Follett possessed, which consisted of invoices that it received from Berman and Associates. And if you look at those documents, and there was extensive discussion in the trial transcript of Exhibit 7 involving the University of Cincinnati student newspaper, there are repeated handwritten signatures on the specific invoices that Mr. Berman and Berman Associates forwarded to Follett, approving the payment of certain amounts based on the having certain advertisements having been run. And then he would get 110%. He was supposed to pay 100% to the newspaper. That was part of why he was entitled to the 10%. And then the 10% was his overhead and profit. The second independent reason why Follett ought to win is that there were real fiduciary duties for years prior to the breach. And even if the court were to find that there was no express trust, or in Judge Hamilton's formulation that there was merely an implied express trust and an implied express trust isn't good enough, there's no dispute that for years...
An implied express trust is a complete contradiction of terms. That's why I asked you.
Oh, all right. I apologize for not appreciating the irony, Your Honor. But even if the concept of express trust is rejected, there's still real fiduciary duties for years prior to the breach. Mr. Berman and Berman & Associates received millions of dollars from Follett and its other customers and was supposed to pay those or 90% of those funds to specified customers in specified amounts. And that is no different from if a plutocrat hired the Northern Trust Company or some other corporate fiduciary to pay its bills. Moreover, Judge Goldgar focused most, if not all, of his holding on this issue on the premise that this court's decision in Marchiando required a disparity in knowledge or sophistication between Follett and Berman, and Judge Goldgar concluded naturally that Follett is a very large company and Berman Associates is a small company, and such a disparity was absent. But that disparity requirement was explicitly limited about 10 years later by this court in McGee, where this court explicitly stated that the interpretation of Marchiando that Judge Goldgar had provided was incorrect. It's not implausible, but it was rejected by this court in McGee. Moreover, there's no reason why one shouldn't view J. Berman and Berman Associates as having fiduciary duties. They were given the money in specified amounts, and Berman acknowledged that he knew exactly what he was supposed to do with it. He was supposed to pay it to the dozens or hundreds of organizations in the exact dollar amounts down to the penny for which he had requested the money from Follett in the first place. And that is exactly the course of conduct that existed for years prior to the breach. In other words, we don't know for sure at what point J. Berman decided to start keeping some of the money for himself. But for some period of time, as far as we can tell, the payments were made in a timely and complete fashion. And therefore, even after the business relationship deteriorated, and even after J. Berman started taking some of Follett and his other customers' money, he still remitted hundreds of thousands of dollars to the actual creditors in the actual dollar amounts that they were entitled to, therefore demonstrating the existence of real fiduciary duties for years prior to the breach. Finally, I would point out to the court that the Fourth Circuit's decision in Ellison, which Berman completely ignored in his response brief, demonstrates that Berman indisputably owed fiduciary duties to Berman and Associates. And the Fourth Circuit in Ellison was confronted with an almost identical fact pattern involving a travel agency that had the same sort of obligation to remit the money net of less commissions to the airlines from which the air tickets were purchased. And the Fourth Circuit concluded that the principals of the travel agency had breached their fiduciary duty to the travel agency itself, and that was sufficient under the bankruptcy code to eliminate their ability to obtain a discharge. So for any of these three reasons, the decisions below should be reversed, and I would, unless there are further questions at this point, I would reserve the bulk of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Becker.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. My name is Leonard Becker. I represent the debtor here, Jay Berman. The one thing I want to point out from the very beginning is that Berman & Associates and Jay Berman are two separate entities. The bankruptcy petition was filed on behalf of Mr. Berman. The appellant in this case is asking the court to expand the bankruptcy code's definition of fiduciary under 523A4. The cases where a trust is found giving rise to the debtor's fiduciary status typically include two aspects. There has to be a pre-existing trust agreement that exists before the alleged wrong is committed by a debtor, and there typically is an imbalance of power and knowledge existing in favor of the debtor here. Neither of those aspects exist under the facts of this case. The court in Marchiando, this court in Marchiando, explained that the term fiduciary is much more narrow in the realm of the bankruptcy's code section 523A4. There has to be that pre-existing and independent trust prior to the alleged debtor's wrong. It has to be expressed with real duties assigned to the debtor. It can't be implied or it can't be constructive. The case which my opposing counsel cited regarding the scrap of paper regarding the two vehicles, that's the Polinsky case, is helpful. In that case, Polinsky relates that trust is created when the settlor manifests an intent to create a trust, the subject matter of the trust is identified, the nature of the beneficiary's interest is also identified. Now, although in Polinsky it was a very simple piece of paper, $53,000 for the purchase of two vehicles, that piece of paper had those elements. There's an intent to manifest a trust, there is a specific identification of the trust property, and there is a nature of the beneficiary's interest. In this case, with Berman and Associates, with whom Follett's contracted with, the documents that are the alleged contracts never identify a specific trust property. There's never an amount of money identified, and that portion of the, it's just not there. Just simply not there. At trial, there was absolutely no evidence presented that there was an intent by Follett or by Berman & Associates to create a trust. There was never identity of any trust property, did not require segregation of any funds, and there was nothing that suggested that Mr. Berman & Associates had any requirement of managing the money other than some bill-paying services. Bill-paying services, I think the lower courts, the district court and the trial court, identified as merely nominal, not a real duty. Something similar to as in Marchiando, where the lottery clerk was basically selling tickets and then had the duty of remitting money back to the state. There was no express trust in this case. Therefore, there can be no finding of fiduciary duty. The other theme that runs throughout the case is that...
Can I just ask, if there had been an express trust, wouldn't that have protected money held in that trust from claims of other creditors of Jay Berman & Associates?
Your Honor, it may have. I don't know the answer specifically to that. I know that... in the bankruptcy proceeding, there were no other creditors who brought claims in Mr. Berman's proceedings. The other theme that runs through the cases, the 523A4 cases, is this imbalance of knowledge or power. And the cases all seem to say that the debtor who has the upper hand of knowledge or power is where you find a fiduciary situation. The Polinsky case, again, I'll refer to that. There, the creditor was physically disabled with a ninth-grade education. The court observed that the debtor in that case had the ability to unjustly or improperly influence the creditor in that situation. Where there is an equal footing amongst debtor or creditor or the people in dispute, there is not a finding of a fiduciary duty. For example, I believe it was the Waldman case where two lawyers were disputing some issues over legal fees. Courts found that those two lawyers were on equal footing. Follett's, as my opposing counsel indicated, is a large corporation. 700 plus bookstores it managed, multi-million dollars in sales every year. Berman and Associates, at its height, had a handful of employees. It's hard to characterize Follett's as having a lesser or some sort of being at a disadvantage in regards to power or knowledge. Now,
how did the yes, bankruptcy sir. Court handle the disappearance of these records?
Judge, the allegation.
I'm troubled by that, frankly.
I'm sorry, sir.
I'm troubled by that, frankly.
Sure, I understand. Counsel has represented both in the state trial court and the district court and before your honors that records disappeared. Records were not there. The fact of the matter is that bank records did exist. Bank records were tendered. Copies of checks were tendered. P&L statements were tendered. So it was not a complete abandonment or of records. There were records there. I will grant some credit, though. There were some records which were not available, and there is testimony that the computers that had some of the records in it were not were destroyed or gotten rid of. I agree with that. But the vast majority of banking records were available, and Follett's had the ability or the understanding of what it spent and what it believed it owed to its media providers. The McGee case that my opposing counsel mentions as somehow rejecting this fiduciary imbalance of power notion just does not hold water. McGee was much different. In McGee, there was the situation where a City of Chicago ordinance placed the hallmarks of a trust upon a landlord. And although the landlord and the tenant were probably equally unsophisticated, it was the existence of trust hallmarks, segregation of funds, management of money, identification of what is to be held in trust, that prevailed for the creditor that day. Regardless of whether or not there was an imbalance of power or knowledge is not quite relevant because the existence of a trust was there. I ask the court to affirm the district court and to affirm the bankruptcy court. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. How much time? You have 1 minute.
Berman says that he's different from Berman and Associates, but breach of fiduciary duty is a tort, and individually committing a tort constitutes individual liability. That's conceded. This also doesn't matter under Ellison, which once again has not been addressed by Mr. Berman. And finally, Berman scheduled all of Berman and Associates' debts on his individual bankruptcy schedule, therefore tantamount to an acknowledgement that he was Berman and Associates for all practical purposes. With regard to McGee, in McGee, this court explicitly stated that a high school dropout or a high school student would owe a fiduciary duty to a plutocrat if the high school student was retained to irresponsibly to manage an investment portfolio and blew it all on gambling. I think that stands pretty clearly for the proposition that there is no disparity of sophistication or knowledge requirement. With regard to spoliation, counsel is correct. We had some bank records which we got from the banks or which Mr. Berman furnished to the bankruptcy trustee or the banks furnished to the bankruptcy trustee. And we had our own records, but Mr. Berman destroyed all of Berman and Associates' records. And I would suggest that for any and all of the three reasons we've given, the decision below should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement and we're to the final case.